You are now listening to the Experience Magazine podcast in association with CEIA. Thank you for listening. This podcast is only made possible by listeners like you. We appreciate you, and we hope that you continue to experience with us. On today's episode, we have Sarah Burrows, Doctor of Education. As the Director of the Career Communities, she believes that engagement, networking, and professional relationship management are keys to launch and advance one's career. She has held various roles in higher education, at Providence College as the Senior Associate Director at the Center for Career Education, at Lasalle University as Director of Internship Programs, and at Simmons University as a Communication Faculty Member and Internship Program Director. She has developed a professional development badging program, created protocols and curricula for internship programs, taught communication courses, and conducted assessment of learning outcomes from work-integrated learning. Sarah serves as the VP of Research on the board of CEIA and is a regional vice chair for the U.S. for the WACE International Research Community. Sarah Burt earned a BFA from NYSCC at Alfred University and an MS from Simmons University and a Doctor of Education from Northeastern University. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Experience Magazine podcast. I'm Eric Allenson, the Director of Computing and Information Technology Co-op Programs at the University of Cincinnati. I'm joined, as always, alongside my co-host and sometimes acquaintance, the maestro of mediocrity, Dr. Michael Sharp. Mike, how's it going, my friend?
It is going well, Eric, and I know you spent 3 hours trying to come up with that one sentence, and I do applaud your effort, sir.
Mike, I have a running list of opportunities to throw you under the bus every time I do one of these introductions, and so each podcast, I'm going to do that. I'm going to lead off with some type of unique nickname or play on words or what have you in order to make your life just a little bit more fun.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hope that I get to repay that during each episode, and I'll find my ways to do
it. I'm sure you will. You always do.
So, Eric, we have another exciting guest on here that we have been trying to get on the show for quite some time, and Sarah Burrows was actually scheduled to come on our last season. And then the pandemic happened, and then we lost our two producers to Austin, Texas. And so we appreciate Sarah's patience, and she probably thinks that we're the most disorganized podcast she's ever experienced. But hopefully after today, her mind will change. So Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. It's somewhat breezy and cool in the Northeast here, but it is spring already and very excited about that and very excited that people are slowly and surely getting vaccinated and I will start interacting with more people face-to-face instead of in this beautiful methodology of cameras.
Yes, we're looking forward to the same. And Sarah, you have quite the rich history in the world of work integrated learning, experiential learning. You are currently the Director of Career Communities at Suffolk University, Center for Career Education and Professional Development. But in looking at your bio and knowing you professionally here for several years, you have been in many places. And I'm curious to hear, how did you first get involved in the field of experiential education?
Well, it was really very organic. I graduated from college with a Bachelor of Fine Arts, but I really wanted to work in public television producing, which was a long shot from getting a BFA. I really wanted the work I was thinking about creating to be distributed to a much wider audience than a gallery setting could enable. So without any real formal experience in broadcast or video production, I needed to learn the skills of the trade. I had shot some video in art school, edited a few things, but it really wasn't enough to go out and start competing for a job. So I did a postgraduate internship at a local cable TV station. They showed me the value of work integrated learning as a lived experience. And from there, it was just a few more steps where before I was hired, I actually became the program manager of that station within about 8 or 9 months. And I worked there for a while and then really realized that I needed the credentials of working in communications with a communications degree. So I went and got a master's degree from Simmons. And then was, hired there after 5 or 6 years of, working kind of part-time in the field. I was hired to run their internship program in the communications department, where really my own lived experience became the basis of my teaching and program development of the internship program. And then later at LaSalle University, also in the Boston area. So, what started as I wanted a job that I didn't have the skills for, I figured out how to go get those skills. I went and got the skills, and then I ended up really getting interested in managing that little TV station.
That is a fascinating story, and you've been to a lot of places. I'm particularly interested in the fact that you bring to this work the lens of communication theory. Both of our producers currently are both communication students getting ready to graduate. I am a two-time communication grad. And so can you tell us a little bit about how that training in communication, how that informs your work with work integrated learning, experiential education, cooperation between campus and community?
Sure. Again, through my work in cable television, advertising, and nonprofit, I developed really the essential skills and aptitudes in collaboration, project management, marketing, et cetera. And all of these were really informed by Kolb's experiential learning theory, as well as the 5-stage model of skills development by Dreyfus and Dreyfus. And I really believe that experiential education, communication lies at the foundation of professional development in both professional and personal success. So teaching courses in organizational communication, managing groups and teams, and leadership and communication has also really informed my work in experiential education. So I think that whenever you have an employer and a student and a faculty member in this triangular relationship of work integrated learning, particularly in an academic setting, if the student is earning academic credit, communication skills are critical to the success of that venture. They're critical to the student having an outstanding good learning experience. They're critical for the employer to have a positive impression of the educational institution. And it's very, very critical as an educator to understand what learning actually happened and to be able to assess that learning in some kind of academic setting. So I think that answered your question, but I kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent. But I think it is all connected through communication and effective communication and active listening and processing and evaluative feedback through communication again. So it's this endless kind of loop.
Right, Sarah. I couldn't agree with you more. I often say that communication people change the world in such eclectic ways. Some people end up in higher education. Some people end up as CEOs. Some people go into the media. And it's really interesting to see the different pathways that you can take through a communication lens.
Sarah, we were talking a little bit just informally before the show, and I mentioned to you one of the things that I'm most curious about, and I think a lot of our listeners are starting to pay attention to now in the work integrated learning space, is this idea of upskilling and creating skills opportunities and badges and new credentials and things to basically authenticate some of the additional work that students are doing, right? And I think it's one of those things that is so innovative and holds a lot of value for the field because it can really distinguish students from others, right? So if you're an employer and you have a student that has done some type of skills-based training and received a certification or a badge coupled with that versus one that has just taken courses, I think there's a lot of interest in that individual that's doing some of the above and beyond work to make themselves qualified for the field. And I know you have some background in that. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your experience innovating and creating badging opportunities for students.
Sure, absolutely. I worked at Providence College prior to my current role. And while there, I developed and managed a program that was a professional badging program. So it was based loosely on the NACE competencies, but also unique to the core curriculum at Providence College and the values of that institution. So the badging program, which we called the Friar Involvement Tracker, but it really encouraged students to engage with all the programming that we did in the Career Education Center to develop professional skills and aptitudes, but also engage in experiential programs like internship, service, and study abroad. And through those engagements that they were already undertaking and already participating in, we grouped them into competencies and then awarded them professional badges based on those competencies. So, collaboration, communication, technical agility, professional work ethic. These were, really the soft skills that employers are actually looking for. The technical skills, we did build a Microsoft Office testing certification as well. So that was, very clear, Microsoft certified in Excel, Word, PowerPoint, et cetera. So again, this was a program that they differentiated themselves when they were going out to talk to employers because these badges could show up on their LinkedIn profile. So there are other ways of doing badging. I mean, LinkedIn Learning is also a vehicle that is on the market. A lot of colleges and universities have purchased that higher level of licensure from LinkedIn. And learning pathways can actually be developed to give students certain badges that then show up on their LinkedIn profile. So it's very visible to their publics. And that can be across the board, things like customer service, experience, emotional intelligence, you can actually earn a badge in emotional intelligence. That's something that employers actually seek, but often students don't know how to articulate it. So it's really an ability to kind of show and tell the experiences and the engagement that students are already participating in through their college experiences.
Sarah, I think that's incredibly innovative and something that a lot of other institutions now are starting to catch on to. Even at the University of Cincinnati, we're exploring a lot of different badging pathways. But, anything kind of along the lines you said to help differentiate students and to validate and authenticate some of the skills that they've developed and some of the or competencies in some ways that they've either derived from their curriculum or through additional work they've done outside of the classroom. I'm hearing feedback from our employer partners all the time how valuable that is. And so I think it's really neat that you were kind of on the cutting edge of this, I'll say, and really pioneering this here at Providence, because a lot of us are still catching up. That's outstanding.
I'll add to that a little bit. I was actually at a CEIA conference, and we had an employer panel a few years ago, and we were just beginning this badging program at PC. So I wanted to hear whether or not this was something employers would value. And the representative from Hewlett-Packard, I believe, a global role in recruiting, said that she was really looking at micro-credentialing in a much more serious way in terms of leveling the playing field, that she really wanted to hire students with, just associate's degrees with some additional credentialing really did make very compelling candidates for their roles. And again, she could see very clearly that they had the specific training that she was looking for, not necessarily a four-year degree that she didn't really need that the candidates to have. So I think there's also an element of kind of breaking through some social difference and
yeah,
that kind of thing that I think is really, really useful.
Absolutely. And you're talking about this idea of, you know, maybe countering the traditional recruitment pathway of the 4 to 5 year bachelor's student, right? And considering, hey, maybe there's a non-traditional student with a certificate degree or an associate's degree. And on top of that, they have a lot of skill-based or competency-based training that somebody could look at as a prospective employer and say, hey, this is the type of individual we'd be interested in. So I think that's really neat as we think about the landscape of higher education potentially changing over the next decade, right? Is how do we validate and create opportunities maybe for non-traditional students to engage in this space? And how do we give them the validation or the authentication necessary so that, hey, if I do have this certificate or if I do have this associate's degree, how am I still a competitive candidate in this employment space? So I think what you're doing or what you did there at Providence was fantastic.
The other component of this is that students or, you know, people, you know, mid-career are really trying to figure out how to either change or deviate from what they've been doing for 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, adding some, you know, certificates through a certification program or micro-credentials is a very accessible way to build their profile and build their skill set without going back and getting another whole degree. Very few of us in mid-career can either afford financially to go back and get another degree or the time involved in getting another degree. But earning a certificate or some micro-credentials is much more manageable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think this idea of upskilling and providing continuous learning experiences, that's one thing that I think I'm going to be tracking or really curious about, Sarah, over the next 10 or so years, right? Is this idea that maybe you don't just come to education once or higher education once, right? But it's this ongoing kind of lifelong experience, if you want it to be, right? Like you can stack these experiences upon each other and continue to maintain your relevance within your employment space, right? By coming back and earning that new badge or that new credential of sorts. So I think that's going to be part of the future of higher ed for sure.
Yeah, Sarah, we've talked with other guests and, you know, talked with colleagues offline as well about the rapid rate at which the field of education is evolving, and in particular, work integrated learning, experiential education is evolving. And given your rich history at several institutions, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how have you seen the field evolve over time? And then as we look into the future a little bit, 5 years out, 10 years out, et cetera, where do you see us moving toward?
Well, I've been in the field of experiential education, I maybe hate to admit it, but over 20 years, and I've seen many changes in the field. So work integrated learning is no longer an option for graduates to get a job. It's really an essential component, whatever form that takes. And the distinctions between internships, co-op, practicums, and even service have become softer and more fluid. And I think employers are seeing that this learning by doing and learning through experiences is really valid in a wide variety of contexts and details. So the details are less relevant. It's the actual learning and the engagement that matters. So again, I think that employers really use work integrated learning as a pipeline of talent. I think unpaid internships and virtual internships are more regulated and scrutinized. Again, two-year college students are more actively seeking WIL opportunities, and high schools are now offering, and in some cases requiring, work-integrated learning in the curriculum. So I think work-integrated learning programs in the U.S. continue to be more varied and less regulated than programs in Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. And I think that's just because typically, you know, Americans are more individualistic. So of course, everything we do has to have our own thumbprint on it. And that holds true of work integrated learning as well. But I think beyond that, I see that, you know, more colleges and universities are also adopting different models where they can help students develop professional skills, aptitudes, and abilities in terms of connecting with people, connecting with opportunities. And another aspect of that is a career communities model, which I can talk about it if you're interested.
Yeah, Sarah, please. I was hoping you could expand a little bit on that career communities model that you're referring to.
Sure. So in January of this year, I was hired as the director of career communities, as we spoke about earlier, at Suffolk, in Suffolk University in Boston. And I'm going to be leading a team of 9 assistant and associate directors of 9 different career communities, which are really based around industry clusters of majors. So they're not based on majors, they're based on jobs in industry that are more closely aligned with one another. And so students start thinking about their major as a little bit less of an identity definition, as opposed to a ticket or an entrance into an industry. So I think it's really about building connections. I think we all know now that getting opportunities, finding opportunities, winning opportunities has to do with who you know, how you engage with people, and how you're able to interact and communicate with people. Again, back to communication. So these communities will really be opportunities for alumni, employers, faculty, students, both undergrad and graduate students, and maybe even prospective students to an institution to engage in networking opportunities, alumni panels, employer panels, you know, job shadowing programs, mentoring programs. And it will all be structured around these industry clusters. So, you know, around the financial market. So accounting, finance, data analytics will all be kind of, you know, those are all very closely aligned right now in terms of the opportunities. So events will be built around those industries. So it's really the idea of also being able to provide deeper and broader expertise in a career advising role. So we'll have, you know, each AD or, you know, each assistant or associate director will really be able to advise students in those clusters much more specifically about the skills and competencies that those employers are looking for. So they're less generalists and more really deeply engaged and embedded in what it means to be in that industry.
Sarah, that is a fascinating development. And I know that you've been a field leader at these respective institutions that you've been at, but also with some of the academic communities like WACE, the World Association for Cooperative Education. And the one that's more near and dear to the podcast here is CEIA, the sponsors for what Eric and I are trying to do. Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement with both WACE and CEIA?
Sure. So again, I have been involved with CEIA for about 5 years. I'm the VP of Research and Surveys. With WACE, a little less so, but I am the International Research on the International Research Committee. And what I do see is a greater urgency in both memberships and both communities for information sharing and the development of best practices across work integrated learning. So students, employers, and career educators want greater consistency in learning outcomes and professional development from work integrated learning, and they're looking for ways to build that improved consistency. So I think platforms, you know, Handshake, Suitable, Quincia, I think we'll move towards a more consistent experience for employers recruiting talent and student learning outcomes from work integrated learning, regardless of where they're enrolled. So I think that, again, when we develop technology platforms, which a wide swath of institutions are using, the outcomes are going to be a little bit more consistent as to how we track the outcomes, how we encourage students to engage in opportunities, that kind of thing. So I think that, as we talked about, more professional badging programs, increased micro-credentialing programs, and the playing field of employment and economic security will become more level, because again, these other aspects of education will again level the playing field. At least that's my hope. And I do think that I think that career and experiential educators, I think, are playing a more vital role in the eventual outcomes for students, both at the graduate and undergraduate level. So faculty are still very important. Their academic programs are still really the brick and mortar of their education. But all, you know, there's so many other systems that are at play, you know, in work integrated learning and the educators involved with those. So, and I think that the professional association, CEIA, WACE, among many others in this country, are really critical to bringing practitioners together to share best practices and to make the outcomes more consistent. So that if an employer is hiring somebody who went to University of Cincinnati or Suffolk University, they're seeing students with similar kind of competency levels develop through these, you know, combination of academic and non-academic development programs.
Sarah, that's fantastic. I was wondering, do you have any upcoming research or events associated with CEIA or even WACE that we should be aware of and perhaps the listeners should be aware of?
Sure. I mean, the virtual conference for CEIA starts in a little over a week. It's coming up really quickly. It's April 19th to 21st. And that is, I think, going to be a very exciting virtual opportunity to hear from a lot of different presenters. We are handing out the Lifetime Achievement Award, the Wilson Award for Research is going to a researcher from New Zealand. And we, my colleagues from Suffolk, Dave Mary and Carrie Aborn and I are doing a webinar through CEIA on May 19th about these, more peripheral career development opportunities and how to engage alumni, mid-career and young alums, in, you know, typical professional development engagement through a career education center. And then we're also going to be talking about professional badging programs as well as career communities. So those are the two things that are coming up in the next couple of months.
That's fantastic. Thanks, Sarah. Mike and I are involved in both of those. So we will definitely keep our eyes out and be looking for that work, because you've done some fantastic new developments here in the Will space. And I'm particularly interested in that badging and credentialing program that you've talked about. So I think your work is really going to resonate there. Well, everyone, we want to thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Experience Magazine podcast. Again, our guest today is Dr. Sarah Burrows from Suffolk University. Thank you for tuning in. For my co-host, Michael Sharp, I'm Eric Allinson. Until next time, take care.